We are in a really interesting section in the book of Isaiah. I want to go back and pick up a thought from where we finished last week in chapter 17. It says in verse 12, beginning, alas, Isaiah 17, verse 12. Alas, the uproar of many peoples who roar like the roaring of the seas, and the rumbling of nations who rush on like the rumbling of mighty waters. The nations rumble on like the rumbling of many waters, but he will rebuke them and they will flee far away. Now, I focused on one thing last week and forgot to focus on the other thing. One thing I focused on is how that the nations are likened unto the troubled sea. Sometimes the sea is very calm, like our ocean is called the Pacific. It was called that because the people from the Atlantic saw it, thought, boy, that's peaceful. And but sometimes it's all stirred up, all, and nations are like that. Okay, so we focus on that, how the nations rise out of the human population, like in Daniel 8. But what I didn't focus on was the idea that this invasion that we're dealing with was not going to be a single nation, but going to be nation after nation after nation after nation until the Lord rebuked them. Now, think with me. Think with me. Back in chapter 8, with the Assyrian invasion, was like a flood. So it's the same thing, the idea of being overflowed by this invading nation. They were told that if you trust God, it'll be fine. But if not, you'll probably raise an angry fist and curse God and curse your king and then go into darkness. That's chapter 8, the last chapter verse. And then in chapter 9, that darkness would continue until a bright light shone. And in Matthew 4, that's quoted of the ministry of Jesus. So watch what I'm doing with the beginning with the Assyrian invasion, all the way until the time of Jesus. There was a dark pallor over the land of Palestine. Okay, and here in 17:2, you see this 17:12 and 13. You see this nation after nation after nation. Well, it reminds me, Tom, you might be familiar with this in Daniel 2. Nebuchadnezzar had a metal man dream.
Gold, the silver, the bronze,
Yeah, the gold, silver,
iron and iron mixed with clay,
brass and iron, and iron mixed with clay. And the gold was
Babylon,
Babylon. The silver was
Medes and Persians,
the Medo-Persians. The brass,
Greece,
Greece. The iron, Rome. Okay, but and before that, of course, was Assyria. But Assyria had already vanished by the time the king had this dream. Nation after nation after nation after nation.
it's a prophetic dream.
It was, but stay with the point. Nation after nation after nation after nation, keeping that territory under their thumb. The darkness. That darkness would be relieved with the coming of Jesus and the preaching of the good news. Okay? And so I didn't look into that aspect. Hello, guys. Saved you a chair. Actually, I saved you two chairs.
It's almost like he's going to save the chip. So,
No chip.
no chip. Well,
I
save
have
me some chips. Chips.
a bag of chips right there, but those are his.
It's a small bag, too.
Okay, we're in a review, and pointed out that where we ended off last time, there was this prophecy of a not just a nation that would gobble up God's people, but a series of wave after wave after wave of nations, and connected that to the darkness that started with the first nation, Assyria, which would be then be ended with the light shining in a bright place, Jesus Christ. Matthew 4 mentions that, and it specifically mentions the prophecy in Isaiah 9 as being the light that the world had been hoping for. So there's this power of darkness, not just over Israel, but over all the nations. So beginning in chapter 13, going all the way through chapter 23, 13 through 23, is a, how do I want to say it? 13 and 14 highlight Babylon, Assyria, and Medo-Persia. I mean, it talks about all three of them, not as being affected so much by the invasion, but they, of course, were the invaders. Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, the invaders. Right at the end of chapter 14, there was a mention of Philistia. And then you go into chapters 15 and 16, it's Moab.
Is Philistia the
Then,
Philistines?
yes, that'd be the coastal range on the Mediterranean. Gaza was part of it. Okay. And then, so you have that, and then 15 and 16, hi, Candy. 15 and 16, Moab. 17, which we did last week, Damascus. We'll get into chapter 18 tonight. It's Cush. You know where Cush is? Can you?
Was
I'm
Cushion
sorry.
like Benjamin?
I'm sorry. Here's what I'm doing. I'm seeing those in my head, as I mentioned. You maybe ought to be looking at a map to see them. That map is pretty good. Either one of those will have the area, maybe not the title, Rachel. But what was the first one? Philistia, along the Mediterranean coast, just west of Jerusalem, that coast there. Okay. The next was Moab. Where's Moab? Just east of the Dead Sea. Okay. Then after Moab came Damascus. Where's Damascus? It's also east, but north. Okay. And then tonight, Cush. Where's Cush?
Stop.
Cush is.
Ethiopia.
Cush is Ethiopia, but not the Ethiopia of today, but it might include Somalia, Zimbabwe. It's a bigger area, okay? I think it was south of Egypt, Cush, south of Egypt, I think. And then in chapter 19 and 20, Egypt. So then in chapter 21, the wilderness area, which might be the Negev, also Edom, which was just south of Moab, very famous city in Edom. And one of the Indiana Jones movies was filmed there.
Egypt.
Petra. Petra, the city of stone, Petra,
Oh,
also known as Sela,
that's probably where
Selah.
petrified comes from.
Well, Petra and petrify both come from the Greek Petros or Petra. But okay, so that's Edom. And then also Arabia. Where's Arabia?
Side.
That's the great desert area. Okay. And then Jerusalem in chapter 22. And then in chapter 23, Tyre. Where's Tyre?
On the
Just
coast.
north and up.
It's on the coast north of the Philistine area. So as you see that, whoa. Try to picture where Jerusalem is in relation to all those that we just mentioned. And
Oh,
where
it's
is it?
circled.
Yeah, it's a big circle.
Huh.
All the nations around Jerusalem are going to be impacted by this invasion of Assyria, Babylonia, Media, and Persia, Greece, Rome. They're all going to be impacted. This section is talking about the impact, not just the instant impact, but the impact from dawn, dusk till dawn, from darkness till light. From the beginning of the darkness that came with the Assyrian invasion to the setting free under the light of Jesus Christ. This area is impacted. Go ahead, Tom.
I had a question about the Assyrians, because I heard of them, but I'm not sure. Are they different than the
Oh,
Babylonians?
yeah,
They are.
north. They were north of Babylon. Nineveh was their capital city.
Heard of Nineveh.
And Babylon was the
That's where I
capital
joined us.
city. Babylon was the capital city of the Chaldeans. That's what,
No.
you know, we call it the Roman Empire, not because the nation wasn't Rome, the capital city was Rome. We call it the
Well, they had,
Babylonian
they
Empire.
controlled the whole area.
I'm sorry?
They controlled the whole area.
Oh, yeah.
The Romans, I mean, during
Yeah.
Jesus's
They
period.
just kind of took over the control that the Assyrians established. Each one of these is going to be absorbing the controlled area that had already been, and that's why it's called darkness. We're under the oppression of these metal man dominators, like what Daniel saw in the statue. But you remember in the statue that a stone cut without hands hit that statue in the feet.
Came a mountain.
And the stone became a mountain, and the statue,
Chatter.
the entire statue just blew away.
I chatter.
Okay?
When.
Like chaff. Here, what does it say at end of chapter 17? He says in verse 13, the nations rumble on like the rumbling of many waters, nation after nation, Assyria,
Well,
Babylon,
there's
Medo
a chaff.
Persia, but he will rebuke them and they will flee far away.
Can't be chased by
That's the
chaff.
same. See, that's right. And that's the same concept, not the same image, but the same concept of the stone hitting the statue in the feet and it being dispersed in the wind. So God, at the proper time, would say, enough of this na national domination of my people and its area. I'm going to take over. Now, we're going to see that all these, in a variety of ways, whether it's the Philistines, remember what the Philistines, how should you answer the Philistine? End of chapter 14. Anybody? Just jump in
That the Lord has founded Zion.
that the Lord has founded Zion. Had the Lord founded Zion at the time Isaiah wrote this? When had the Lord set, let's go on into chapter 16, Moab. Moab was told in verse 5, a throne will establish in loving kindness, and a judge will sit on it in faithfulness in the tent of David. Hadn't happened yet. It was what God had intended to do. They now, what's up with all these nations? If you, that's a poorly worded question. All these nations had a reliance or dependence on something about their nation or about their fierceness or about their productivity, about their idol gods, about their wise leadership. All these nations had some kind of our security is in this. And every one of them was told, these guys are coming in. You need to go to Zion. You need to bring the tribute lamb to the daughter of Zion there in 16:1. You need to bring the tribute lamb. And on and on. Your security is not going to be that you have this great defensible position. Your security is not going to be that you have this outstanding military army. Your security is not going to be that you have this great agriculture. Your security is not going to be that you are noted for your wise leaders. Your security is in none of those. Because this thing that's coming through is going to gobble up everything, every one of those. Your security, how should we answer? Go to Zion. Bring the tribute lamb to the daughter of Zion. That's what, 16:1. Go to Zion. Find your comfort. Find your answers there. Okay, now, I think I got a little ahead of myself. And no, I haven't. And that's exactly, it's interesting. If I put my head to it, I don't need to follow my notes because it's all up here. You know what I'm saying? So we're getting ready then to go into chapter 18, but I think there's one or two more things I want to say. I guess I want to reiterate that this section is expanding the area of oppression from Israel to all of the surrounding. Linda, you saw that. Israel's in the middle, Jerusalem's in the middle, but we've got all this territory around that the empire's occupied. Okay? So we come to chapter 18. Alas, O land of whirring wings, which lies beyond the rivers of Cush, which sends envoys by the sea, even papyrus vessels on the surface of the waters. Go, swift messengers, to a nation tall and smooth, to a people feared far and wide, a powerful and oppressive nation, to a people feared far and wide. So, who are we talking about here? I mean, it's Cush or Ethiopia. But what aspect of their existence is he focusing on?
Their physical, their power.
Their military power,
Strength.
Feared far and wide. Let me read a little bit for you from 2 Chronicles chapter 14. In 2 Chronicles, let's see, where is that? That's right after 1 Chronicles. When I can no longer preach, I can be a stand-up comedian. Be in my
Second,
walker. I'll be in my
second,
walker, but
second.
no, on 14.
Not far, I'm crazy. Sorry.
So 2 Chronicles 14, verse 2 says, Asa, that's the king, did good and right in the sight of Yahweh, his God. He removed the idols and the altars and removed the high places. In verse 6, he built fortified cities. And then verse 7, he said to Judah, let us build these cities and surround with walls and towers, gates and bars. The land is still ours because we have sought Yahweh our God. We have sought him, and he has given us rest on every side. So they built and prospered. Now Asa had an army of 300,000 from Judah, bearing shields and spears, and 280,000 from Benjamin, bearing shields and wielding bows. All of them were valiant warriors. Now Zerah, the Ethiopian, came out against them with an army of 1 million men and 300 chariots, and he came to Mareshah. So Asa went out to meet him, and they drew up in battle formation in the valley of Zephathah at Mareshah. Then Asa called to Yahweh his God and said, Lord, there is no one besides you to help between the powerful and those who have no strength. So I'm going to stop reading right there, and you tell me who was who. Who was powerful and who had no strength? In Asa's mind, the powerful were the Ethiopians, weren't they? We're outnumbered 2 to 1. And we can't fight these guys. And there's no one to help but you. So help us, O Yahweh, our God, for we trust in you. And in your name they have and in your name have come against this multitude, Yahweh. You are our God. Let not man prevail against you. And they won. Now, that's an interesting story, but my only point was to call attention to the powerful size of the Ethiopian army. Okay. And this was not too distant from the time of that we're dealing with right here. So when we talk about a people feared far and wide, we're talking about a military strength. And this powerful military strength was going to be crushed
Think about
under the invasion of Babylon. Go ahead.
the wall of Jericho.
Yeah.
All it took was blowing the horns and bang, all the walls fell down.
All it
They had
took
to
was
march around it 7 times
all it took
in
was a,
7 seconds.
all yeah, all it took was obeying God, letting him do
They
the
had to go
work.
7 times around.
But they end up going 13 times around. Yeah,
Yeah,
six,
the last
one time around for the first 6 days,
silent.
and seven on the last day.
No.
And
Okay.
only when they blew the horns could they
And
shout.
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, but coming back to this, I wanted you to see that from 2 Corinthians or 2 Chronicles 14, you got me doing it. 2 Chronicles 14. From 2 Chronicles 14, that when we talk here about people feared far and wide, you can understand the fear that they had.
Was that other text that was saying smooth, tall and
They're tall and smooth.
yeah.
Yeah,
Describing the
these would be
Ethiopian.
like the Watusi. They're tall, smooth, dark skinned, powerful warriors.
Yeah, I might also think of the other texts where when I think it was when the Moses was leading the chosen people, they're like, we're like grasshoppers in their sight. It was like they were terrified. They're so tall, they're giants.
I'll stay focused here.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fine. But I want to stay kind of focused on this. It says, as soon as the trumpet is blown, you'll hear, for Yahweh has told me, I will look for my dwelling place quietly. Now, get this picture, Alan. Here's this massive army that is feared throughout the Mediterranean. But then there's this picture of God up in heaven looking down, just kind of quietly looking. Okay, I see that. He's not disturbed like the people are. He's not agitated. Okay? And so,
I have another interesting story, Ron, I'd like to interject.
interject.
Okay. There's a story, I can't remember where it is in the Bible, but apparently God's people, they were having to eat horses' heads and bird poop because of
Donkey heads.
donkey heads. Okay.
Yeah, and that's because of their.
And then there were these two lepers or first, and
Let's
they're like,
not go there,
are
Tom,
you?
because I got. It's a great story,
That
but
was a great
I
story.
want to stay focused.
As before. Huh?
Like Obi-Wan Kenobi said to Luke, stay on the target,
No.
stay on the target.
With his helmet across his
I
eyes.
say on the target. Our target is right here. And I, Yahweh says, I, verse 4, I will look from my dwelling place quietly, quietly, say, not agitatedly, like dazzling heat in the sunshine, like a cloud of dew in the day, heat of harvest. A cloud of dew in the heat of harvest. Boy, wouldn't that be refreshing? You're out there trying to cut the grain down, maybe it's 100 degrees, and a cloud of dew is, oh man. Anyway, God says that's what it's like having God watching out over this fearsome army. For before the harvest, as soon as the bud blossoms and the flower becomes a ripening grape, then he will cut off the sprigs with pruning knives and remove and cut away the spreading branches. What in the world is that talking about?
Well, I think about when you, if you cut away vegetation, the sap goes to the fruit and bears the fruit. If you cut away it,
But he's cutting away the fruit.
yes.
Yeah.
What text were you?
Number 5, 18:5.
18, sorry, back in
To cut
15.
away the flowers. As soon as the bud blossoms and the flower becomes a ripening fruit, then he will cut off the
Are
sprigs
we in
with
Second Chronicles or Isaiah?
no,
Isaiah
that
18.
Isaiah. Sorry,
Cut
sorry.
off the sprigs with pruning knives and remove and cut away the spreading branches. They will be left together in mountain for mountain birds of prey and for beasts of the earth. And the birds of prey will spend the summer on them, and all the beasts of the earth will spend harvest time on them. What's he talking about?
Doesn't sound like he's removing the fruit, though.
Yeah,
He's
bodies.
removing the sprigs and the branches.
Well, I want you to catch the picture. I want you to catch the picture that this vine is spreading, maybe
Rod,
invading. Yes.
is it saying that those animals, the birds and the beasts, are going to be consuming the dead people?
I see you.
That's where we're going. We're going to try to ferret this out, flesh this out. Okay? But the picture is of this army that is feared, and they're perhaps coming to invade Israel. I mean, that's what Second Chronicles 20 or 14 was about, an invasion. Maybe they're joining with Judah to hold off the approach of the Babylonians. That was a role that Egypt had. I don't know which might be here. We got envoys back and forth sorting things out. But whether he's talking about literally about the people or whether he's talking about the plans, I don't know which. But it was cut off before it could come to fruition. And the bodies of the army were left on the ground for the buzzards and the other carrion to eat. Yes, Mary, that would be exactly the picture. At that time, and the at that time would be when the Cushite or the Ethiopian people were subdued. Now remember, we're not just talking about a specific point in time, like with the fall of the Babylonian army or the fall of the Medo-Persian. We're talking about this entire from the darkness to the dawn. Talking about this entire time when Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome were dominating the area. We're talking about that entire time. At the time that the Ethiopian then was ended, a gift of homage will be brought to verse 7.
Lord of Yahweh.
Yahweh of hosts. Yahweh, what's hosts? Yahweh of hosts.
Angel
Angels.
armies. Army.
Armies. Doesn't have to be angels. Multitudes. Who, and we're going to see it when we get to, into chapter 19 here in a minute. Who was it that marshaled the Babylonian army to invade Egypt? Well, he's
Yahweh.
all Nebuchadnezzar. No, it was
Yahweh.
Yahweh. It was Yahweh. He was in charge of that host of arm of military. Ungodly people, but they were his host. It doesn't have to be angelic armies. It can be whatever army, whatever multitude. Host means multitude. Like the host of heaven could be the stars, could be the million-man army. It just means this multitude. Yahweh's in charge of the multitudes. And a gift of homage will be brought to him from a people tall and smooth, a powerful and oppressive nation whose land the rivers divide, too, so it can be brought from them to where? We know to whom, to Yahweh, but to where? Mount Zion, okay? To the place of the name of Yahweh, Mount Zion. You see, even here, we have the solution is not have this massive army, but to worship Yahweh. You want security in life. It's not because the United States is a massive military buildup. It never will be. It'll be because the United States honors Yahweh. That's where our security will always be. I love what the Hebrew writer says in chapter 12. We receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken.
And I like what's on every currency and coin in the United States of America. In
The
God we trust.
lie.
The
In
lie.
God we trust. Yeah, go
I
ahead.
just
Oh,
like,
the lie.
I like
I
how
see.
every one of these nations
So many people don't
from
trust
chapter
God.
13, God is using this to bring them to him.
Yes. Yeah. Isn't that great? That's a really good picture. This metal man image, this Assyrian and Babylonian, Medo-Persian, Grecian, and Roman dominance was used by God to bring people to him. You need me. But you can't withstand this, fellow. Your wisdom, your agriculture, your military, your defensive position. When we get into what chapter is it, over into chapter 21, we're going to be talking about the Arabs out there in the sandy waste. No, they're going to invade you too. Being alienated, not alienated, just being
Isolated.
off the grid is not an answer either. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I'm right out of my head. Sorry. I forgot. I'm in a junior moment again. It was something to do. Oh, Paul's writing.
Go ahead.
Don't remember.
All right, it'll come back to you. We're going to get into chapter 19. Now, chapter 19, the oracle concerning Egypt. Remember what the word oracle means? Burden. This is the word from the Lord that you're going to have to carry. Old Yahweh is writing, doesn't say will be writing, is writing on a swift cloud and is about to come to Egypt. Amazing. That language. Yahweh is coming on a cloud.
I have a question. Does sometimes I refer to them in writing angels?
No. We'll
Because
see what we'll see.
I think of the in Revelation when Jesus returns, he'll be in the clouds, but the cloud is like empty. It's all the angels acting
Yeah,
apparently.
well,
No.
see, we're not really going to deal with Revelation because everybody misdates that thing. The book of Revelation, its message was ended with the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. Everything it talked about had happened when that took place. And I'm not going to argue it. I'm just going to say that's my position on it. And so the coming on a cloud in the New Testament is not different than the coming on a cloud in the Old Testament. Because why? Why would I say something as obtuse as that? Why would I say that?
Use the
See,
Bible.
because
Define the
That's
Bible.
it. That's it. When Jesus said it in the New Testament, he was talking about what they already knew. He wasn't introducing a new thought. He was just saying the old thought. And we're going to develop that right here.
That's Matthew 26:64.
Okay. Okay. So, the oracle, the burden concerning Egypt. Behold, Yahweh is riding on a swift cloud and is about to come to Egypt. The idols of Egypt will tremble at his presence. The heart of the Egyptians will melt within them. So I will incite Egyptian against Egyptian, and they will each fight against his brother and each against his neighbor, city against city, kingdom against kingdom. Then the spirit of the Egyptians will be demoralized within them, and I will confound their strategy. Now, let me ask you a simple question. How long does it take for a standing army to become demoralized and have their objective obliterated?
Depends on what.
It typically isn't instantly, is it? So this coming on a cloud is not just some instantaneous thing. It's something that it progresses through time to where the spirits, the hearts of dedicated warriors become demoralized and they give up and they fight each other. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, again, building on the idea that coming on the clouds is an Old Testament concept that was known well in the days of Jesus and wasn't something that just instantly happened, something that took the campaign of the army to accomplish. Go ahead.
It was siege.
It was siege. And it might be siege after siege. We got area after area after area mentioned here, don't we? City after city and kingdom after kingdom. The siege of Jerusalem took how long? And the one that Jesus talked about in Matthew 24, how long did that take?
3.5 years.
3.5 years. It started in the north, up in Galilee, and just moved on down city after city after city after city until Jerusalem was surrounded and captured. It was an ongoing siege, and so, but that was the coming of the Lord. Not in person, but in agency. The coming of the Lord here in Isaiah 19 took place how?
A cloud on a
Coming on a cloud. Now, I'm going to say something very bold and outrageous. Coming on a cloud does not involve any kind of water vapor. There's no water vapor involved. But the invading army, as they're rushing in, and their horses are kicking up what?
dust.
A cloud of dust. Okay.
There's even that phrase, the clouds of war.
Or after they're finished with that city, they leave it how?
Burning.
Burning, which also is
Clouds.
a cloud of smoke. So when you read the phrase coming on a cloud, don't get this picture of the somebody riding the doughboy down like a cumulus cloud. That's not the picture that's being painted here in the Old Testament. The picture being painted in the Old Testament is an aggressive, capturing army approaching. Say, that was coming on a cloud. And you see how there was no water vapor involved. It was just the dust and the smoke, the particulates that were kicked up in the air through battle. All right. See, and verse 3. Then the spirit of the Egyptians will be demoralized within them, and I will confound their strategy. What's a strategy? Battle plan. Yeah. And a battle plan is generally formulated by whom?
The generals.
The generals. And they're generals because of what?
Experience.
Experience and ability. The wisdom that they have in forming a battle plan. I would be horrible at it. I wouldn't know how to fight anybody. Unless, of course, I read Joshua and the judges and see how, what their battle plans were. I might be able to do it then. But I will confound their strategy so that they will resort to idols and ghosts of the dead and to mediums and spiritists.
Mediums, not medians.
Yeah, you're right.
Mediums.
I misread that. Mediums and spiritists. What's going on there? Does that remind you of King Saul?
Ah, yeah, Witch of Endor.
Yeah. Witch at Endor. And he finally was able to conjure up Samuel, and Samuel says, tomorrow this time you'll be with me. That's a lot of help, right?
Yeah.
Look over in Deuteronomy chapter 18 with me.
He said, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are you saying, uh-oh?
Because it tells what happens to people.
Now, we already saw in Isaiah 8, and I'll just refresh your memory. In Isaiah 8, verse 19, this is at the Assyrian army invasion. And when they say to you, consult the Medians, mediums, Isaiah 8, 19. And when they say to you, consult the mediums and the wizards who whisper and mutter, should not a people consult their God, the dead on behalf of the living, to the law and to the testimony? Right? Now, where did Isaiah get that idea? Here in Deuteronomy 18, I'm going to start with verse 9. Deuteronomy 18, verse 9. When you enter the land which Yahweh your God gives you, you shall not learn to imitate the detestable things of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or daughter pass through the fire. And that's just not walking across hot coals. That's being burned in the idols alive.
He drops into a volcano.
One who uses divination. What's divination?
Looking to the future. Yeah. I Ching.
Like reading tea leaves.
Yeah. Any kind of, I wonder how to figure out the future. Yeah. One who practices witchcraft, or one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer, or one who casts a spell, or a medium, or a spiritist, or one who calls up the dead, also known as a necromancer.
But Jesus,
for whoever does these things is detestable to Yahweh. And because of these detestable things, Yahweh your God will drive them out before you. You shall be blameless before Yahweh your God. For those nations which you shall dispossess, listen to those who practice witchcraft and diviners. But as for you, Yahweh your God has not allowed you. Yahweh your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your countrymen, and you will listen to him. You want to know what the future holds? Ask the prophet of God. You want to know how to make a decision? Don't go to a Ouija board. Don't go to a spiritist. Ask God. Get on your knees and ask him in prayer, or read the Bible. Okay? Here, he says, back now in Isaiah 19.
Rod, what?
Yes?
What person is speaking?
Where are you?
I'm in Deuteronomy 18, verse.
That's Moses speaking.
Oh, Moses.
Moses, that's Moses speaking. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. When he says, God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your brothers, it's Moses. Okay? And so, he said, I am going to, in verse 4, I will deliver the Egyptians into the hand of a cruel master, and a mighty king will rule over them, declares Yahweh by the Lord Yahweh of hosts.
We're not in Deuteronomy anymore, are we?
No, back in Isaiah 19.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, here's 2 points for you. Number one, the spiritist, the occult is hogwash. It's powerless to accomplish any good for anybody. But the second thing I want to say, and I don't think this applies to anybody in here, but you might know somebody to whom it does apply, consulting the Ouija board, consulting the horoscope, consulting anything like that is abominable to God, detestable to God, and should not even be considered by a follower of God. It's hogwash. It doesn't work. And the fact that Egypt was not able, through their conjurings, to keep the Babylonians from coming is proof, settled proof in history.
They also couldn't.
Yeah, let me make the point, Tom.
Wasn't God's
settled proof in history that that stuff doesn't work. It could not keep God from doing what God was going to do. And if it can't keep God from doing what God's going to do, lay it aside and follow him. Okay? Well, now, what was the point you're trying to make?
And when Moses led the Hebrews out of Egypt, and the magicians, the astrologers, the soothsayers, the sorcerers were only able to mimic the first three miracles. After that, they said, "This is the finger of God. We can't do this." God did the seven final miracles, including the angels of death passing over.
In fact, right.
Elijah is another example on the mountain.
But the point is clear, isn't it? That the occult practices cannot give any deliverance, any protection, any guidance.
Well,
and only God can.
That doesn't prove.
Well, and they're detestable to it.
Yeah.
And he kicked Israel out because Israel started doing what the nations before them started doing on the land. That's a different story. The point I'm trying to make here is that the things that people try to do to establish a future or find some kind of security, if it's not at the throne of Zion, it ain't going to work. That's the point I'm really trying to make. Okay? Or the positive thing is, you want security for your future? Come to Zion. Bring the tribute lamb, i.e. your sacrifice. Hebrews says, what is the sacrifice that God really, really likes?
The heart.
The sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that give thanks to his name. That's what he's looking for. Our adoration, our devotion. Okay? Remember again, this is the coming of the Lord that's accomplishing this, but it's Nebuchadnezzar's army, see? And so, when Jesus says, I'll be coming on a cloud, see, he's not talking about himself personally any more than God was talking about himself personally, right? You see that? Not talking about himself personally, talking about his agent. I'm sending my agent.
That's what I was going to say about Paul. Sorry.
It's not the Assyrians anymore. It's now the Babylonians.
Well, yeah, because it was the Babylonians that did to Pharaoh the things that are talked about here. You can get that, Linda. You can get that by reading in Ezekiel. And I forget the exact chapter, but our Ezekiel scholar over here might be able to tell you. But it's where he says Nebuchadnezzar labored hard against the Tyre and didn't get a dime, so I'm going to give him Egypt. Now you can find that. I forget what chapter that's in, but it's there. And if you're really, really interested, you will find it. My point here, however, is that Isaiah 19:1 did not require the personal bodily presence of God for it to say he came. And so when we come to the New Testament, Jesus said, I'm coming on a cloud. It didn't require him bodily, personally to be there. He could send his agent to do the same thing. And I believe his agent at that time was Titus.
It's the
Roman general.
I remember the point I was going to make about Paul in the New Testament. I can't remember what book it's in, but he says, I'm going to paraphrase because I can't remember how it goes, but he says something about there are others that preach against Jesus, but I'm glad because
Philippians
they're sharing
one.
Jesus. Oh,
Philippians 1.
Yeah, they're sharing Jesus.
Whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed.
There you go.
They're trying to accomplish harm for me, but I don't care about the harm. Jesus is
being preached.
Yep. Philippians 1. Okay. Now, let's keep going here. In verse 4, it says, I will deliver the Egyptian into the hand of a cruel master. A mighty king will rule over them, declares the Lord Yahweh of hosts. And the waters from the sea will dry up. Now, that's kind of interesting to me because that's how Israel got out. But that's how it's not literal. It's the figure that's involved there. If my people can get out when I took them from you, the invading army can get in because I want them to. I think that's the river will be parched and dry. The canals will emit a stench. The streams of Egypt will thin out, dry up. The reeds and rushes will rot away. The bulrushes by the Nile, by the edge of the Nile, and all the sown fields of the Nile. Now, I don't take this to mean that the White Nile and Blue Nile would become trickles or wadis that fade away in the summer heat. Never happened. Never will happen. But I take it to mean what would be the consequence to Egypt if those things did happen. Fishermen will lament. Those who cast a line into the Nile will mourn. And those who spread nets on the water will pine away. Moreover, the manufacturers of linen made from combed flax and the weavers of white cloth will be utterly dejected, and the pillars of Egypt will be crushed. That's kind of an odd thing to put in the drying up of waters, the pillars of Egypt crushed, and all the laborers will be grieved and sold. Unless you look at the agriculture as being the pillar of Egypt. Okay. And so I look at this as being figurative, not literal. What does it represent? What does it stand for? What would be the impact upon Egypt when the Babylonian invaded them? Thought?
Well, I was just thinking it could be possibly, you know, they had those oblasts that they would, and each pharaoh, and it just went on about how great the pharaoh was and everything, and those things being crushed too.
The devastation of Egypt. So now,
those ones covered with hieroglyphics.
The passage in Ezekiel, I think, said that the humiliation of Egypt would be short-lived, like 70 years. It seemed like 70 years also of Egypt as it was of Israel. But she would come back not as a mighty nation again, but as a humble nation. Her power would be stripped away. There's just one more thing I want to share with you. We're going to stop at verse 15. The princes of Zoan are fools. Then the advice of Pharaoh's wisest advisors have become stupid. How can you say to Pharaoh, I am the son of a wise, the son of ancient kings? I mean, you see the irony there? What's he saying there in that verse? How can you say you're a wise man? Why would you ask a question like that? Think it through. Think it through.
Well,
good.
Your advice is stupid. Everything is falling apart.
Your advice doesn't work. How can you call yourself a wise man when it doesn't work? Okay, isn't that the point? Well then, where are your wise men? Please let them tell you and let them understand what Yahweh of hosts has purposed against Egypt. How could any of their wise men know what Yahweh of hosts has purposed against Egypt? Read Ezekiel. But if you read Ezekiel to find that out, what does that say about you? Doesn't that mean you put some value on the writings of Ezekiel? You put some credibility to it? How do you become wise? What is it that Solomon said? What is it that the beginning of wisdom?
Fear of God.
Fear of God is the beginning of wisdom.
The fear of the Lord, fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom. All I think in one place, and I think in another place, the beginning of knowledge. You want to be wise.
That's verse 7.
Yeah, 1:7.
1:7.
Yeah. And you want to be wise, then tell them what Yahweh said, what he's purposed. Verse 13, the princes of Zoan have acted foolishly. The princes of Memphis are deluded.
It's not Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee is named Memphis, Tennessee because the terrain is like Memphis of Egypt. Yeah, really. The Delta and all that. Yes. Yep.
I didn't know that.
Well, you look on the map where Memphis, Tennessee is, there's also a Cairo. There is.
Cairo.
Yeah, Cairo, just like the Egyptian. And there's one more. I forget what it is, but there's three Egyptian named cities right there in Indiana, Illinois, and Tennessee, I think. Because Memphis is in Tennessee. Yeah. Those who are the cornerstone of her tribes have led Egypt astray. Yahweh has mixed within her a spirit of distortion. They have led Egypt astray in all that it does, as a drunken man staggers in his vomit. And there will be no work for Egypt, which head or tail, palm branch or bulrush may do. If you don't know the purposes of God and you try to figure it out yourself and save yourself and rescue yourself, you'll be just as stupid as these wise men of Egypt who couldn't keep Egypt from falling to Nebuchadnezzar.
Do you,
pardon?
Do you think he sent this message to Egypt?
I don't know.
I bet you he did.
He may well have, but I
you don't need to warn him.
Yeah, yeah. But the point that we need to take from this is that the wisdom of the wise is foolishness to God.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot thwart the plans of God. Nobody can thwart the plans of God. What we can hope to do is understand them and get on board with them. See? And so whether you've got like Egypt, you've got this very wise and very productive economy and very wise leadership, it doesn't stop what God's going to do. You can't keep it from happening. Whether you're like the Ethiopian with this million-man army, can't keep God from putting an end to it. The only thing that he tells, and he tells it repeatedly in different ways, come to Zion, bring your tribute to Zion, bring your gift to the God of Zion. We're going to pick up there next week, finish from 1916 through
2110.
Okay. So what I, the reading that I want you to do now is 19 through 23. Okay, I've been having to go six chapters at a whack, but 24 through 20, 24, 5, 6, and 7, 24 through 27 is a unit, and I don't want to break it up. So you get off the hook here. You only have to do five chapters every week until finish with chapter 23.